so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, take two of another toy department. Someday, you know, when we do the greatest hits box set compilation of this podcast, maybe we can release the lost 5-minute podcast we recorded the other night that never got out. What do you think, Matt Kolsky?
I think that's a beautiful idea, but that does not exist.
Yeah, all right. It was going to be a good one because I was definitely wasted while we were recording. Now I'm sober.
It's a lot.
What were you saying?
I said that explains a lot because the I felt like I was having a really hard time communicating.
Yeah. Well, we were working against the technology and the substances. Yeah. So it's a lot to overcome. But we're ready to rock and roll today. It's good to get back to chatting. A bunch of stuff to cover today, including the new Netflix show, Easy. We got lots of sports topics. Coachella. And the hullabaloo, the controversy, I don't know, whatever it is that's surrounding Coachella. I want to talk about the show and that stuff as well today. But maybe we should start. Should we start with the homework?
Sure.
I had asked you to watch the Scott Van Pelt led edition of SportsCenter. Maybe that's a good place to start, just in the fact that it sort of matters what edition of SportsCenter you watch now. And we have talked about the decline or the difficulty of SportsCenter in maintaining quality programming, across the ESPN sort of news platform. But I actually think, and I kind of stumbled upon the Scott Van Pelt thing a couple of weeks ago, I really think they've hit on something here. I think they may have actually found a way forward, and I'm curious if you watched it and had any of that same vibe.
That's an interesting interpretation. I don't know if it's a way forward only because I think it's a cult of personality, essentially.
Whereas, like, they're not, you know, the Scott Van, do you think the show worked just on the kind of a yes or no sort
of
basis?
I mean, if you're asking me a binary question, I do think it works, but I think, I have followed Scott Van Pelt since he was originally a SportsCenter anchor. I love listening to him as a talk radio host, and I just think he's excellent. I think he's smart and funny and clever and has original ideas and also does great interviews. And I think he's someone who feels, I don't know, I don't want to speak for him, so I don't know if it's journalistic responsibility per se, but he's not a Skip Bayless out here trying to, he's not playing TV for clickbait. He's a guy who wants to have a reasonable and interesting conversation about sports, and I think that appeals to a lot of people. I mean, I try to sell that myself in my own career. So I'm very in line with Scott Van Pelt. I'm just not sure the Scott Van Pelt Sports Center is emblematic of ESPN figuring anything out, except that he's very good.
Well, yeah, I mean, he is very good, and he's certainly one of the few people left there sort of cut from the Patrick Olbermann, Kilbourne, Rich Eisen, Glory Days kind of cloth, you know?
Yeah. Totally.
He was around, I guess, a little bit in that era, but,
a little bit, but he was like a lower level sports center guy when they were the Kings.
Yeah. And so, there is some of that, but I don't know that his, and I think he's the best. But I don't know that his talent is so singular that they couldn't find four or five people to do that.
No, of course they could.
At that level.
My point is not that his talent is singular. My point is that I'm not sure they're committing to his type of talent so much as they're committing to him.
Yeah, that's fair. And if you look at the other sort of personality-driven sports centers, because now there's, I think, three or four of them, right? Mm-hmm. There's the L.A. one.
Yeah, with Neil Everett.
Yeah, with Neil Everett and or is it Neil? Who was the other guy with Neil Everett? Sometimes it's Kenny Mayne,
but I think it's Buttigieg now.
Yeah, and then they, you know, there's another one with like Nicole Briscoe and somebody. Uh-huh. You know, it's
those are not like the Van Pelt one.
Yeah, the Van Pelt one I feel like is unique, and it's also the one that's sort of most like a radio show, and that's part of why I wonder if maybe they've stumbled upon something here of like, okay, look, you know, you're in a world where highlights are constantly available 24/7 on the internet.
Yep.
You know, so how can you take that highlight package and either make it more interesting or cover things? And I think Van Pelt, one of the things that's so great about it is he talks to really smart people who have interesting takes. They do really interesting things with the highlights. You know, they'll talk about like the Bad Beats segment, which is a segment he did on the radio show forever. Like that's a way to put a highlight package together of something that I wouldn't have necessarily been able to look for on my own and then present it in a way that is entertaining, you know?
Yeah, if you're just showing the highlight package that's going to be attached to the ESPN story when it's on the internet, you're giving me nothing.
Right.
But like you said, the other sports centers are still giving you that nothing.
Yeah.
And so, they may have stumbled upon a way forward. I'm not sure. I have no reason to believe they'll take it.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Van Pelt's also really good at reading the highlight in a way that a lot of people just are not.
He's great at his job. And, I'm not sure. Again, it's not that his talent is necessarily singular. It's that the faith put in him and control given to him over that hour of television, I think, is what's singular.
So maybe I'm putting too much faith in ESPN, thinking that they're being smarter.
I think you are, or maybe I'm putting too little. It's hard to say.
I don't know. How do you feel about the official exit of Chris Berman?
It's not an exit at all, and I wish it was.
You don't think it's an exit at all?
It's like he's not doing NFL primetime every day anymore, but he's still going to have a segment on that, and he's still doing the baseball playoff series on the radio, which is a truly offensive travesty.
I guess. Are you listening to a lot of ESPN radio during the baseball playoffs? He's not on television anymore. He's not going to be calling Home Run Derby. He's not doing the completely unwatchable Monday night countdown. I don't know.
First of all, I expect that to stay unwatchable. And second of all, go away already, old man.
I don't know. I kind of had mixed feelings about it in that, he stayed way too long. And it became a parody.
And he's staying more. That's exactly the point.
And he became a shill. But, at the same time, and this is, I don't know, one of the reasons why I liked it.
Not only a shill, but a bad caricature of himself. Yeah. It's the saddest thing that can happen to anyone in the public eye.
But this is a guy that did so much, you know what I mean, for this medium that I think both of us are huge fans of. I don't know. It was nice to at least sort of try to remember when he was a respectable, innovative broadcaster, you know?
I don't know.
All right, here's a random question that's Chris Berman related, but it's a little bit more general. Is it more fun to have someone in there who's outright terrible than just boring?
Probably, but I would prefer good.
Next year, if they replace him with someone generic, Troy Wingo's going to do the main countdown show. That'll be fine.
He's good.
But, if you just had someone, if you just had replacement level broadcaster in his place, would that be more or less enjoyable than him being just really bad in a character?
Well, let me say this: I think you're onto something to a degree, but again, I'd rather have someone good. And I will say, people find Mike Tirico boring, and I know it's a different job, but to me, the downgrade from Tirico to Sean McDonough doing play by play on Monday Night Football is precipitous. Ooh. And I find it obnoxious every time I watch.
Yeah, so, I can't go with you on that one.
Boring is not necessarily bad.
I think I'd actually rather listen to a McDonough game than a Tirico game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I enjoy Sean McDonough's work.
Oh, I just think he's terrible to listen to.
Yeah,
I feel like he's doing a bit the whole time. It really drives me up a wall.
I don't feel like that at all. I feel like he's totally being himself, and he can get real. He's had a couple of real moments, especially with the stuff involving his, like, you know, his brother and his dad, and I don't know.
I'm not trying to tear apart the guy's family. I don't like his broadcast style.
All right, fair enough. I think that may be more of a taste thing as much as anything else.
But I guess I'm just saying, like, I do like Mike Tirico. I never was like, oh, it's not like listening to Al Michaels where you're like, this guy is special.
I think Tirico doesn't play well with others. Like, he doesn't set anyone up ever. Oh. You know what I mean? And he's just, it's so down the middle.
We're good together. Like, yeah, maybe because Gruden doesn't really need anyone to set him up.
Right. He's really prepared and he's, you know, he's solid. He's just not, I don't know, he's not an interesting voice to me.
Putting aside our disagreement about Monday Night Football broadcasters, I think you're probably right. It's more fun to have a disaster than a, you know, nothing. But that's one of the premier studio jobs in sports. They should be able to get someone entertaining and good, yeah, like Trey Wingo.
Yeah. We'll see who they get. All right. While we're here and talking sports, I sent you a text the other night during the college playoff game.
Yeah, you did.
That was simply college f***ing football. Yeah. As a college hater, I'm curious where you came down watching that game the other night, because it was undeniably a classic college football game, right?
A great game is a great game. That was excellent.
And you enjoyed yourself, but you feel no different about the medium given the context of our conversation, I'd say. Fair?
No, I mean, a great game. Would you say it was like peak football? I wouldn't.
Yeah, I would say it was peak football.
So, like, that to you, they played the game as well as you'll see the game played this Saturday and Sunday?
I take that back. I suppose if you mean by peak football that what we were watching was that the highest level of skill you can watch on a football field, no, then I don't think it's peak football. But if by peak football you mean was, is that as much fun as you can have watching a football game, then I say yes, it was peak football.
Yeah, no, but that's not your question to me. Your question to me is, does it change my opinion about college football overall? And my opinion about college football overall is not about whether there's entertaining games at, you know, what rate entertaining games happen. I like watching sports played at the highest level.
Yeah, this is like the crux, really. And you can tell because we're coming at this question from like two different questions, really from like the same side. Like, to me, when I say, isn't this awesome? I mean, isn't this entertaining and aren't you having a good time watching it? And you, when you say, isn't this awesome? You are talking about the skill level of the game that is being played.
Well, is that fair? Yeah, but those two things work in concert to provide your entertainment experience, or my entertainment experience. Like, would I rather watch the Spurs dominate the Clippers with you know, playing at the highest? I said Clippers, I meant Sixers. Would I rather watch the Spurs dominate the Sixers playing at the highest level versus a really competitive Duke UNC game? No, I'd rather watch the competitive Duke UNC game. But on the whole, I find most college basketball to be played poorly. Same thing with college football. Would I rather watch, you know, the Patriots steamroll the Browns with Tom Brady functioning at the highest possible level of quarterbacking, or that national championship game? Obviously, I'd rather watch the national championship game. But on the whole, the NFL regularly delivers. I would say they deliver excitement on a similar basis, but the NFL delivers a better product regularly.
Football is a little bit different than basketball, because I think
the gap is bigger in basketball, but the gap is still there in football.
Well, but the one thing that's different is that, honestly, the play calling is often more innovative now in the college game than it is in the pro game, and that sort of matters to me. Like, I like the the formations and college guys willing to go for stuff, and you see a lot of these things that then eventually bleed into the NFL. I mean, the NFL's, you know, kind of spread passing thing, all of that came from college football. It dominates the NFL now. So, you know, when you're talking about the difference between NBA and college basketball, yeah, like the college basketball style of play in latter-day years, which is kind of, you know, super regimented, lots of passing around the three-point line, trying to get a shot, you know, in the middle of an offense, you know, that's not entertaining to watch. And but I don't think college football has that problem. I'm not going to argue that the skill level is the same. And sometimes, you know, I mean, I'm a Florida fan, so I watch a lot of games with terrible quarterback play, and that's not fun for anybody.
Terrible quarterback play, and that's the case around much of the country. And also, just at any given moment of the 11 football players on the field for any given college team, with the possible exception of, you know, two or three of them, five of those guys are not very good.
But don't you think that, I mean, first of all, like the fact that the guy making the catch in you know the winning catch in the Clemson game is a former walk-on who's about my size or your size.
Doesn't that
make that kind of awesome? I don't know. And like,
it makes a good story for a film, but I'm not here for the human interest when I go to watch sports for the most part.
That's kind of all I'm here for, actually. I don't know. And the other thing I would say is that, you know, that college football with a lousy quarterback is to me much more watchable than pro football with a lousy quarterback. And there are a lot of pro football games, including some in these playoffs with lousy quarterbacks. So, you know, I don't know. I suppose I'm never going to convert you. But if you didn't have fun watching that game.
The lousy quarterback in the playoff game this weekend, Brock Osweiler.
Yeah.
He's better than probably any quarterback that'll come in the draft this year.
No, that's not true. I mean,
99% of college
quarterbacks. I watch Brock Osweiler at Arizona State a decent amount. And he was nowhere near the player that Deshaun Watson is now.
That's right, but right now
he's not Mitch Trubisky. He wasn't Mitch Trubisky in college, or necessarily right now. I mean, you know, you watch, you know, Winston and Mariota step into the league, and they're, you know, they're as good as half the quarterbacks in the NFL from day one.
Yeah, if you could put Deshaun Watson under center for the Texans this weekend, I don't think you would.
Oh, I think I would.
All right.
I mean, you know, like, obviously you have to say, like, you know, does he know the offense? And you know what I mean? Like, if you had Deshaun Watson magically practicing the Texans playbook and all that stuff, you know, for the last 6 months, yeah, I would much rather watch him play football against Patriots than Brock Osweiler.
All right. Well, even if that's the case, there's two or three guys that fall into that category, and there's 150 teams.
I mean, I guess that's fair. I just don't. I don't view.
I'm not defending I'm not saying I love watching Brock Osweiler. I'm just saying in 99% of college football games, the quarterbacks are worse than Brock Osweiler.
You know, and it's a few more than that. I mean, there's, you know, there are guys that are not going to be in the draft because they're not eligible. Like, say, the kid at USC. Like, you know what I mean?
You're debating finer points here, but this is. I'm just talking about facts. You may not like watching Brock Osweiler. He's way better than the vast majority of quarterbacks playing in college. Just,
yeah,
way better.
Sure, but I think you're like the context, you know what I mean, where you have more players at comparable skill levels, you know, around him, then it changes a little bit. It makes it a lot more watchable than just watching Brock Osweiler out of his depth. You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
Part of the point is that you're not just watching Brock Osweiler out of his depth. You're watching arguably the greatest quarterback of all time on the other side. You're watching DeAndre Hopkins, who can make a crazy play at any moment,
sure,
even with Brock Osweiler playing quarterback. You're watching, you know, whatever else you like in the pro game. And like, things are just at, you know, we're going around and around. It's a pretty straightforward thing here.
Yeah, I just, I don't know. I'm really trying hard to understand your position.
I don't think it's that hard to understand. You just You just don't value the same stuff. To me, the stuff you're talking about, here's an analogy that will either just make this more confusing or help. The idea of grading quarterbacks, we talk about how do we factor in Super Bowl rings, right? And to me, the Super Bowl rings are something that should be like a final bonus point in quarterback rankings. Like if we're on the same level, if we're Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, and we both dominated the NFL for 15 years, and we're trying to say who had the better career, who was the better quarterback, you count Tom Brady's Super Bowl rings at the end to give him a slight edge. That's how I would do it. But if you're comparing Robert Horry to Kobe Bryant, that's a bad example. Robert Horry to Hakeem Olajuwon, Robert Horry's five rings don't mean anything because Hakeem Olajuwon is obviously the better player, and we don't need to count championship rings to figure that out. So for me, college football, the competitive championship game, that's the championship ring. You know? And college football might have 10 championship ring games in a year, and the NFL might have 7. But we don't have to count those to know that the NFL is playing better football.
Okay, let me give you an analogy, and maybe you'll think of this as a straw man argument, but I to me this one makes the most sense because when you're sitting down to watch a football game of any kind, you're watching a TV show, right? So
to a degree,
right? You're watching a television product. To me. When I watch just a regular, non-football, regular normal television show, right? I'm watching a show and grading it as such, and the acting and the skill level of the acting and say the, is proportional, and it's a part of that. It's certainly a key part of my enjoyment of the thing overall, but if the acting is just okay, but the story is really great and interesting, I'm still going to enjoy that. And I think what you're saying is essentially because the actors in a college football game are not as skilled as the actors in a pro game, it's not watchable. And to me, what I'm saying is the whole matters as much as the main component part does.
It's not unwatchable. I'm not saying that. First of all, that analogy is trash because here's the difference. If you knew that the game was fixed, would you want to watch it? Even if you didn't know what the outcome was going to be, it change the way you watch it?
Well,
because that's what a TV show is. It's a fixed outcome.
I mean, I watch
entertainment with a fixed outcome.
I watch some wrestling, so I do watch sometimes things with predetermined fixed outcomes.
Okay, you wouldn't watch that the way – you wouldn't appreciate that the way you appreciate college football. Part of the key is that people are competing, and for me, when competition is at the core of the thing, I want competition to be at the highest level. But that to me is – that's like a nitpick with your analogy. I forget the actual disagreement I was going to have before I got sidetracked there.
All right, fine. We'll move on because I'm never going to get anywhere with you on this, and I don't think we're ever – never going to agree.
It's not unwatchable. It's here's what it is. It's like the seventh most watchable thing in my life.
Yeah.
But I only have time for 6 watchable things.
All right. Well, that's much –
I would rather – last night – I watched The Girl on the Train because I like movies. And, I'd mostly rather watch a movie than a college football game.
Yeah, and so I'm the reverse.
Sundays,
I watch
with NFL football every weekend in football season. I'm going to use Saturday to do one of the other things that I enjoy in my life.
Yeah, I'd much rather watch football than a movie most times. And sometimes I'd rather watch a college game than an NFL game if it's the right set of circumstances. So,
well, bully for you,
bully for me. I will, however, be glued to the NFL this Saturday.
Damn right.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm doing this Saturday? Right after I'm glued to the NFL?
What's that?
There's no way you could know. I don't know why I asked the question like that. I'm going to see a live reading of one of my favorite films of all time, one that we should probably discuss on the podcast if we haven't already, which is Brain Candy, the Kids in the Hall movie.
Oh, I saw that movie a very long time ago.
It's very bizarre.
Yeah, I don't think I liked it for that reason. But I do, you know, and I was a lot younger, and I, you know, maybe in, you know, maybe revisiting it, I might feel differently today.
Might be worth revisiting. But anyway, I love it, and the Kids in the Hall are live in San Francisco doing a reading of it on Saturday night. So very exciting time.
That sounds delightful. I do enjoy the Kids in the Hall, and I certainly enjoyed the TV show. All right,
anyway, so football Saturday.
Football Saturday will be great. Should we? Do you want to talk NFL playoffs or should we switch gears?
A quick run through. I don't want to spend too much time on it. I don't think.
Yeah, I feel like we're gonna have a much better set of games this weekend than we did last weekend.
We better, because that was trash.
And, you know, I mean, look, it's still the way we thought it was, right? It's like the Patriots are the clear favorites.
Yeah. One disappointing game from a competition standpoint was the Sunday night game, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Giants, like, I thought the Packers would win. I did not think they would, you know, triple up the Giants.
Well, it was a weird game because the first 20-25 minutes of that game,
it was pretty competitive.
I would say more than competitive. I would say, look, the Giants were, there was a point where I was texting my friend, like, I think the Giants are going to win this game by double digits. Like, they
Well, certainly their defense seemed to be working in the first quarter, and they were knocking on the door, but everything changed when they couldn't score touchdowns.
Right, they couldn't score touchdowns.
Really shows you how important that is.
Yeah, and they let Green Bay hang around, and then Green Bay figured some things out, and then it was a non-competitive game.
I will say, I think given what we saw from Aaron Rodgers from the second quarter on, I don't think the Giants were ever going to win that game.
If you were a person who just didn't want to see the Patriots win, probably not a huge stretch. Who would you rather wins the other AFC game?
Gosh, it's so difficult. Because here the question you have to ask yourself, and I will just be totally honest and tell you that I do not know the answer to this question. But the question you have to ask yourself is, if you're playing the Patriots, do you want to take your shot at outscoring them, or do you want to try to stop them? And, you know, if you want to take a shot at outscoring them, there's no better trio than Roethlisberger, Brown, and Bell. And if you want to try to stop them, the Chiefs are the best defense left. I don't know. I mean, the Texans are, I guess, a pretty good defense, but they can't beat the Patriots. So yeah. The Chiefs are the best defense left with a chance to beat the Patriots. How's that?
I think it's the Steelers to me for a couple of reasons. One, you know, sort of going along your lines, I do think that, you know, they have the opportunity to win a shootout with them.
Yeah.
I also think they have an outside chance of that defense bothering Brady enough to win the game.
Rush.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't think they're a great defensive team, but, you know, on their day, on the right day. And I also think they're less likely to be afraid. And I just think the fear factor with a team like the Chiefs that hasn't won a lot of big games going into Foxborough against Brady.
Yeah.
I'm going to give Pittsburgh the best odds of anybody to knock off.
I probably agree with you based on the things you just said. I would plus, you know, moral issues aside, I love watching that offense, man.
Yeah,
Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell, I think, are the best receiver and running back in the league right now. You know, there's some other receivers. There's three or four you put in that conversation: Julio, ODB. Who am I missing? Anybody?
Well, ODB doesn't really have the running back.
What?
ODB doesn't really have the running back, right?
I'm just straight up comparing.
Oh, you're just talking about good receivers. Well,
I'm saying Brown's one of the top three in the league, probably, right?
Yeah. But if you're talking about receiver running back combos, that's why I'm saying.
This is the best of those. There's no question. This is the best quarterback running back receiver combo in the league. As good as the Falcons are, they don't have the single running back. You know, both of those guys are good. Neither of them can touch Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not going to sit here and say Devontae Freeman is good, as Le'Veon Bell.
His offense is better right now. And that involves coaching and the line play and the different looks at running back and the multiple receivers available to them. But from a trio standpoint,
yeah,
I don't think there's any question that the Steelers are the best in the league. Because, again, Roethlisberger's elite, you know, top seven or eight probably. And I honestly believe that is the number one receiver and number one running back in football.
Oh, I'll tell you the number two receiver, but I'll give you the number one running back.
And even if he's the number two receiver, that's pretty ridiculous. Yeah.
He's definitely in the mix for the conversation for number one, but it wouldn't be unreasonable to have him at like four, would it?
Well, who's the third guy ahead of him? Because I can live with it if you put Beckham and Julio ahead. Who's the other one that I'm missing?
Yeah, you're right. He probably can't really go much lower than three, can he?
Yeah, I don't think you can.
You wouldn't put Fitzgerald or Dez or AJ Green or no. Yeah, he's third. He's third at a minimum.
Yeah, Dez is great. Fitz is still very impressive and was, you know, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Incredible, but today there's no chance you take him over Brown.
Yeah, I mean, Fitz caught 111 balls this year, something crazy like that. It's
incredible.
Weird.
This is not a hit piece on Larry Fitzgerald by any stretch.
No, but you're right. It's really hard to say he's better than Brown.
Brown is just unbelievable right now, and a sixth round pick, you know, who has just worked himself into. It's unclear exactly what his elite skill is besides being an awesome receiver. You know
he's
what
pretty,
I mean?
He's pretty fast. Like he's pretty fast.
He's fast, but it's more the quickness. It's little things. You know what I mean? I mean, he's fast, but lots of receivers are fast.
Yeah, it's true.
He's not like Tyreek Hill fast.
Yeah. Man, it's going to be a fun weekend. And particularly, yeah. You know, I've said this before. Like, it wouldn't shock you if any of the four teams left in the NFC wound up coming out of there, right?
Nope. And it wouldn't shock me. The only team that would be shocking to do anything at this point is the Texans.
That's correct.
I mean, I think
if the Texans are still in the NFL playoffs by the end of the first quarter of that game, I'll be shocked.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see the spreads. For some reason, ESPN has the spread for the Seahawks-Falcons game, but none of the other ones listed on their page here. But I don't know. I will say, if you asked me to bet it, I would bet the favorites on Saturday, certainly.
I believe New England. I believe the Patriots open at like 16. Are you still betting
them? I don't care about that one. Obviously, they're the favorite. So the Falcons are a 4.5-point favorite right now, and I would if you made me bet that game, I would bet the Falcons, not just pick them.
Interesting. I think I would pick the Falcons but take the points.
All right. 4.5, really. That's not a lot of confidence from my Atlanta contingent here.
Yeah, well, you know, I've lived through a lot of Atlanta playoff games.
So. Well, you're doing the responsible thing. We can agree you're being responsible. I assume the Cowboys will be favored, and that one I don't know. I'm not sure which way I'm going to go yet. But I think there's at least a possibility I take both underdogs on Sunday because I do think I'm going to pick the Steelers.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it's offense versus defense, and I just think the Steelers' offense is a better offense than the Chiefs' defense right
now. Are the Steelers underdogs? Because I thought they opened at favorites. I think the line moved.
It's opened as 1-point underdogs. Yeah. Hold on. I'll check a gambling site right now. Right.
I mean, this is one of those things. Like, we didn't really even intend to talk that much about the NFL, but I really am psyched for these playoffs.
It depends. Each year it sort of changes between divisional and wild card, which is the best weekend. But I think very clearly the weekend, this is our best weekend of football. Four games, three of which look like they should be very competitive. And the fourth of which features a Super Bowl favorite. So this should be good. And it is a 1.5-point spread to Kansas City. So Pittsburgh is the underdog, and I would bet both underdogs on Sunday.
Right. If Houston were to win that game, all-time NFL upset? Oh, would that be an all-time NFL? I feel like it would be.
The only thing that pops into my mind as close is the Patriots Super Bowl loss in the undefeated year.
The upset was
not nearly as big.
Patriots over the Rams in that Super Bowl is up there. I think they were like 12-point dogs.
Yeah, no, that's true. The first Brady Super Bowl is a big upset. And you know, I think probably my remembrance of that is colored by Brady's career since then, which we didn't know at the time what Tom Brady was, which is why they were huge underdogs. But boy, Houston, I mean, this is a no-chance game, right?
Yeah, I mean, it sure seems like it. It really does.
It's just if they somehow manage – the only way they can win this is like 17-14. And if they manage to do that to the New England offense, I think we've all been underrating this Texans defense.
I mean, the Patriots beat them 27-0 with Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah.
And I want to say, was Watt still playing in that at that point of the season?
Yeah, but he may have already been hurt.
Yeah, I mean, oof.
But either way, it's ugly. You gave up 27 points to Jacoby Brissett. Now, if I remember correctly, there were a couple of brutal turnovers that led to those points, but like Brock Osweiler is still the quarterback.
Still the quarterback. Yep. Oh boy. All right. Let's talk Coachella, shall we?
Yeah.
I'm. You know, there was a lot of controversy last week. I mean, were you not feeling this at all? Because I read a lot about it.
I read like a couple of Facebook posts, but I wouldn't say I felt like it was everywhere.
In fact, there's still like the talk about you know, people trying to get headliners to like donate to for those of you who haven't heard, basically. And it's weird because to me, if you know Philip Anschutz, who is the A in AEG, AEG is the events company that owns Coachella. Among many other things, they have vast holdings in the sports and concert world, and they promote shows around the country. But Coachella is one of them. Mm-hmm.
Aren't they a primary sponsor of a Premier League team?
I don't know that they own a Premier League team. I know that they are literally the largest investor in Major League Soccer, and at one point owned more than one team. I think now they just have the Galaxy.
Oh, okay, all right.
But yeah, Philip Anschutz, and I believe that is him personally, as opposed to AEG, the company, is a big investor in soccer, a big supporter of soccer. Right. So he, I guess, has donated some. You know, he's a billionaire and he's politically active, and he's given some money to some groups that have been anti-gay rights and anti-other things. And so there was, you know, an article, I think the first main one kind of appeared in Pitchfork that pointed this out and is, you know, telling people, well, you know, you're giving this money, you know, you're going to these kind of counterculture events, and here's a person who is not only who stands directly against those values, and on top of that is contributing money to stop those things. And so you're, you know, by going to Coachella, you're essentially supporting that, and you shouldn't go. Anschutz came out a little bit later and said, yeah, I gave some money to some of these things, and but not because they were anti-LGBT, right. And as soon as I found out, I stopped giving them money, and our company's record is good, and, you know, whatever. To me, I kind of feel like it's beside the point, though, where he's giving his money, you know what I mean, and whether or not I like the things that he likes. I feel like there are a couple reasons for this, and maybe I made my peace through this because I like Chick-fil-A.
Well, and you don't have a choice, really.
And at some point, you know, I, you know, had to come to terms with, you know, am I going to make this purchase knowing that, you know, there's somebody who has views opposed to mine that's going to make money off it. And I just think once you start going down the rabbit hole of what happens to my money.
Oh, yeah. No, you're done.
Yeah. Like after I spend it, particularly if you're going as far as to like the individual person. You know what I mean? Like I feel like you have a contract, right? Like you make a deal. Like I'm going to spend X amount of dollars, and for that, I'm getting a concert. You know what I mean? And, you know, it's – you have to think like, okay, well, if I'm going to boycott this concert because I don't like what this guy thinks, you're also boycotting every single person who works for him, you know, many of whom actively support and sustain the music industry on literally a daily basis. Like, AEG puts on a lot of shows around the country and does a lot of good things. And there are a lot of music-loving people whose lives depend on those shows. So if you're going to be like, well, Philip Anschutz and I disagree on gay rights, he's not getting any of my money. Well, there are a lot of other people who are not getting your money then too, who may be aligned with you philosophically. And I don't – it's weird to not take that into account, don't you think?
Well, it's tricky. There probably is a line though, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, I suppose – I also kind of think like
– like what would Philip Ann, whatever his name is, what would he have to do to make you not give your money?
Well, but here's the thing, and I don't – like I don't want to go all First Amendment-y. But I do sort of think like
it's no, but that's he can do whatever he wants. It's not a question of legality. I'm asking you.
Right, but that's what I sort of mean from like a personal standpoint is like he's an American. He's allowed to feel what he feels. He's allowed to take part in the political process.
Yeah. No, you're misunderstanding me. Like if he was, you know, a known child sex worker trafficker, you would not buy tickets.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, like
it would be disappointing that he wasn't in jail, but you know, there's a line somewhere where you'd be like, you're right, I can't buy that ticket from that guy.
I suppose that you're right. It feels like if you were like, well, you know, he financially enables the Ku Klux Klan. Like, somewhere in there, I'd probably say no. But here's the thing. The other thing about that, though, is like he's a billionaire. Like me not going – and by the way, with vast and diverse business holdings. You know what I mean? Not going to Coachella is not going to change that fact, right? So me not going to Coachella, yeah, I guess I'm no longer part of the system then that would be hypothetically supporting the Ku Klux Klan in that case. But like – they're still – the Klan's still getting their money. You know what I mean? So what have I done? That's why I feel like it's like if you're against what Philip Anschutz may or may not stand for, just battle the thing that he stands for. You know what I mean? Like fight it on that level, you know?
Basically agree. Yeah. I do think I agree with both sides. You know, I agree. I understand the desire to not want to give money to that guy. I also understand both a level of cognitive dissonance in terms of whether I'm actually giving my money to that guy versus an organization that includes that guy. And I also understand the idea of a very slippery slope about following where your money goes, because eventually you won't be able to shop.
Yeah, your money is going to many, many other things that you do not like or support.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And I mean, you know,
it's kind of the same thing that like when people are like, I don't want my taxes going to that. Well, like, guess what? Your taxes are going to go to many things you like and many things you don't like. That's exactly part of the deal.
But your taxes you have to pay legally and you don't legally have to go to Coachella.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm not saying it's exactly the same thing.
Well, no, but I mean, that's my point. It's just it's a very tricky issue. And both sides have points. But I can't really blame anyone for going either way, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I just don't think you're going to solve much or you're going to take an ethical stand. I think if you want to go to Coachella, you should go to Coachella. Like, that's the contract.
And I'll say this as well. Taking an ethical stand on Coachella is nothing more than an ethical stand.
Like, yeah.
Realistically, if we did a very showy one at that.
You know what I mean? Because you're going to tweet, I'm not going to Coachella. You're going to tell your friends. And you know what I mean? I don't know.
But that's what I'm saying. It's nothing more than a philosophical stand. Like, if you follow all of your money, I think there's a decent chance that, like, you're giving more to organizations you dislike by your grocery shopping than you are by your Coachella ticket.
Indeed. Indeed. I agree with that 100%. So that said, I'm pretty psyched about Coachella. This year, are you thinking about going? You're obviously a lot closer than I am.
I'm thinking about going for the first time, and it's because for the first time, I look at the lineup and I see three headliners that I would, in all, you know, at least with one of them certainly, and arguably two of them at this point, probably would not buy the ticket for $100 and $150 to see them alone. But all three nights, I would be super excited about the headliner.
Which two of those would you not pay the money to see alone?
Well, I've seen Radiohead like four times, so that's a question mark. And I would not go to a Beyonce concert. I'm really? Not paying $200 to sit in the upper deck of Oracle and like look at Beyonce on a video monitor.
Okay. Because you are a Beyonce fan, right? You love Lemonade.
I like Beyonce, yeah. But I don't really go to a lot of stadium shows. I don't think they're worth it.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I come at that a different perspective because I'm usually not paying, and my seats are usually decent. So,
exactly.
So I'm like, ooh, Beyonce.
Right, but that's the point. Is like usually it's like one or two of the three headliners I'm really into, and a handful of bands on the undercard. But then those are always playing at the same time, which makes me insane. But like, I would be fired the hell up for all three of those night closer shows. And then I made a list of 15 or so other groups that I'd be interested in seeing over the course of the weekend.
Yeah. I mean, look, I've heard people talk about this set in terms of just, oh, well, it's three great headliners and they didn't do anything else. And I'm a little bit like, wow, like, the headliners are great. My favorite band is in there. And certainly Beyonce's the consensus queen, right? Like,
she's queen.
She's one of the most unassailable, I guess, figures in music, right? I mean,
maybe the most.
Yeah, arguably the most. So you've got, you know, two nearly bulletproof people, and Kendrick Lamar generally acknowledged as the number one guy in the hip hop game, right? So
if there's an unassailable hip hop artist, he's it.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's pretty strong. But I really like some of the small print stuff. I mean, we've talked a little bit last week in the in the year in review, how excited I was about the new XX record.
Yep. They're on my list.
XX Live is an interesting proposition. There's certainly the spareness of their music does not necessarily lend itself to a giant stage.
But that doesn't mean it won't be an interesting, you know, midday chill set or whatever it is.
Yeah, totally. But if you listen to our music podcast, from the end of the year, there's so many of these bands that we talked about, you know, pop up here, you know. I had a Francis and the Lights track on my list. They're playing this show. You had a Glass Animals track on there. They're playing that show.
I had a DJ Shadow and a Mac Miller track. They're both playing.
Mitski and Tycho. Schoolboy Q. I didn't like their newest record, but I am a I cannot endorse enough the experience of seeing Two Door Cinema Club live. They're a really good, fun live band with some really great poppy live songs. Justice is a really fun live experience. We haven't seen Lorde in a couple of years, and I think that'll be pretty cool. Local Natives is really good live.
If I'm there, I will go see Lil Uzi Vert because I want to know what that's like.
Yeah, Car Seat Headrest.
Sonata's a DJ I really like. There's just a ton of stuff. NAO, who I had on my year-end mix. There's a lot of this is the stuff that fills out a festival and makes it like a particularly good experience on an individual level.
Yeah.
Is if you find those 10 bands that, you know, you have to wait to come around once every 2 years because they're small bands that don't tour everywhere all the time, you know, and all of a sudden you see six of them in a weekend. It's really that is what can make festivals really cool.
Well, yeah, and you are in a unique position, and I'm assuming a lot of our listeners are as well, in that in the Bay Area you can do the Stagecella because it's two weekends and the bands need something to do in the week in between or the days before or after. So almost all of these bands will appear in the Bay Area within this 2 week period at some point. So you actually,
except for Beyonce, Kendrick, and Radiohead.
Yeah, that's correct. Which are significant. So, you know, you can sort of, you know, do a lot of that, kind of make your own. But I mean, the opportunity to see these bands, and let me just say this, because you know, you haven't been. The setting.
I've been to the setting.
It's unique. Well, you've been to the setting.
I saw a fish festival at that location.
Yeah.
So, like, I have a pretty good idea of how that part works.
I mean, at the end of the day, you know, most of these festivals, you're standing in a field or a parking lot. But that polo field.
Yeah.
It's as good a field as you're going to get.
Really good.
You know, like, the grass is pretty decent, particularly if you were there weekend one. It hasn't been totally torn up yet. It's, yeah. You know, it's flat all the way through, so it's ideal. You have all these mountains in the background. That part you've gotten. There is a certain scene aspect of Coachella that is unlike any of these other festivals. I mean, I know you've been to Outside Lands. I'm guessing you've been to Bonnaroo at some point.
I have not.
You know, I've done almost all of them now. And I'm not saying it's necessarily the best environment, but it's a completely unique environment in that there's this crazy Hollywood celebrity presence. Right. There's the, you know, Coachella has really always been the most dancey of these. So there's this kind of dance culture element that's very prevalent. And then you just have kids who are showing out because they know it's a big deal and this is a thing that everybody wants to be at. The people watching is insane. For 3 days, it's insane. And the vibe of, hey, we're all going to meet in the desert and we're going to do this thing. And then the show ends and, you know, you're staying at some Palm Springs vacation home or you have a hotel. But, like, there's sort of these, like, crazy parties and you're spending your nights in a hot tub and then your day out in the sun and the sunset. And you know,
you got a hot tub for me? Because if you can hook me up with a hot tub, I'm almost definitely going to go.
All right. The hot tub is part of my favorite part. Like, I always viewed Coachella as a kind of rock and roll summer camp. And it used to be kind of my main vacation experience. And I don't know, you know, it's a little harder to do that now because it's so in demand that, you know, finding a really great place to stay is a giant pain. In fact, we're already, as people who don't have accommodations yet, we're way behind the game right now.
Keep me informed on that, because that is the most likely deterrent for me, is that I'm going to space out, not do anything about accommodations, and then be like, oh man, I can't spend that kind of money.
Yeah.
So if you get accommodations, hook your boy up.
But it is it's a really great experience. If you've never done Coachella, I would recommend trying it at some point before you get too old.
Yeah, I'm close, man. I felt like I was too old for festivals at about 30, and I turned 35 a couple months ago.
I retired from festivals 2 years ago, and it clearly didn't take. I did five last year, so you know, I like going, but you know, I'm just willing to admit that I'm way older than everyone now, and I'm a special case.
Yeah,
you know. But it's really.
Yeah, I'm looking into my future right now, and I don't know how I feel about it.
Welcome to my world. Welcome to my world.
Well, I'll tell you what, the burden would be eased if I started getting free tickets to stuff.
It does help some. not that there's not associated expenses. I promise you that.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, so this is, to me, and, you know, now that we've started to see some of the other bills leak out, you know, Bonnaroo is out this week, and it's fine, but...
No, this is the one. This is a really great lineup.
The Governor's Ball lineup is pretty good, but this...
That's way on the other side of the country. I can't go there.
But this, to me, is pretty exceptional. So
plus, I remember what happened at last year's Governor's Ball, you know?
I was there.
I know you were. We talked about it on this very podcast.
Well, all that happened. But you know what? Like, the Sunday rain day... It was a great time. I went and explored New York City. I saw a couple shows. I almost got caught in a Kanye riot, and it was great.
Which is always fun.
Yeah, I wouldn't trade that day. So do a festival. You know, Outside Lands is great, and to me, truly one of the best. You're lucky to have it in the Bay Area, but some of these other ones are excellent and worth experiencing as well.
For sure.
All right, should we talk Easy real quick?
Yeah, let's wrap up with Easy, which I meant to try to assign as homework, but didn't. Let's start with, did you like it?
I did. Maybe we should give some background for people who haven't heard it or heard about it. Easy dropped on Netflix. A couple months ago, huh? It's been sitting there that long?
I think so.
And it's an anthology series from Joe Swanberg.
Who I think is my favorite director at the moment.
And I feel like we've discussed on this podcast.
I think either before. Drinking Buddies or Digging for Fire, maybe?
Yeah, we definitely talked about Drinking Buddies, which is great.
And Happy Christmas is another one of his that I really love.
Yeah, and you may know him better than I do. Like, I don't know if there's like sort of an actor cult around him, or if he just
do you know about how he shoots his stuff?
No, tell me. Well, I mean, I know it's very improvisational, right?
Yeah, I mean, so he really just he's from Detroit, but a Chicago guy. He went to high school. I mean, he was born one day away from me and grew up like 10 miles away from me. So I don't know if that colors our how much I like his film, if it has to do with like very similar backgrounds. But he sort of just gathers some acting buddies in Chicago, gets a location or two, and outlines a story. And then they just shoot a movie, essentially without a script, as I understand it. Although technically, he's the writer of all these movies. But Jake Johnson and Anna Kendrick both appear a few times in his stuff, and I think both pop up at some point in Easy, because there's a lot of cameos over the course of the series, and again, it's an anthology, so each episode is sort of a different set of characters.
They say it's an anthology, but like,
there's a little bit of crossover.
Yeah, like people are kind of connected, so I don't totally feel like it is. You know what I mean? The episodes are standalone in a way,
right? I've only watched, I think, three of them so far.
Yeah, I think I may have gotten four.
Would be totally self-sufficient. There's also some crossover,
right? Indeed.
But either way, it's this very conversational, sort of loose. I mean, I think he's technically considered a mumblecore director, but I sort of like these movies with small focus that are about people's lives and that feel like you're really stepping into a real person's life. And I think letting actors develop characters and improvise is a big part of what makes that happen on the screen, and I think it comes across just as well and Easy as it does in his films for me, and I really like it.
Yeah, there are a lot of likable people, you know what I mean? You're gonna be like, oh
yeah,
my god,
identifiable issues.
It's Aya Cash, it's Orlando right. Bloom.
God, I love Aya Cash, and hey. she played a little bit against type in this one.
Yeah, and that episode is a perfect example, right? Because you've got Aya Cash, you got Dave Franco doing Dave Franco things, she's playing a little bit against type, and everyone's kind of like the characters. I don't know if it's a credit to Swanberg or the actors, but like you do feel like the depth of these people, which sort of makes it amazing that they're making all these things up. It's to me a very enjoyable watch, and I'm excited to kind of tackle the rest of the series. I'm hoping to probably binge it all out by the end of this weekend.
Yeah, I expect I will do the same, and I think, you know, certainly it's a credit to the actors. I would not want to take anything away from them, but just the simple fact that I get that feeling from every Joe Swanberg project I've watched makes me think it is also to a significant degree a credit to the director, because, you know, they're small budget films with actors that clearly he has chosen as, you know, favorites, and who I have to imagine are, you know, working under scale to work on his projects. Maybe with the exception of Easy, because Netflix does like to pay, but like, you know, Happy Christmas has Melanie Lynskey, Anna Kendrick, and Lena Dunham. Like, clearly they're not making as much money as they could when they're in that movie, and yet they all get to give really convincing and human performances, and so I think he definitely deserves a lot of credit for that feeling you get from his projects.
Yeah. I don't, you know, it seems to me from the stuff that I've watched, there are a lot of very, like, kind of crush-worthy people.
Yes.
And I don't know if that's the way that they draw those people in a way that makes you seem like they're very winning, and you kind of, like, you know, I mean, obviously you're talking about, you know, you cast Olivia Wilde and she's attractive and, you know, you're going to see that. But there's also something extra about the character they're playing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Melanie Lansky is another great example, yeah. So,
gosh, I love her too, though. I honestly, part of it is that we have, I think Joe Swanberg and I legitimately have, like, similar taste in people and stories. And I don't know if that comes from both graduating in 1999 from high schools on the North Shore of Chicagoland, but, like, he's almost, I almost feel like he's speaking directly to me.
I think you really want to hang out with Joe Swanberg. I think that's my takeaway from all this.
But not as badly as I want to hang out with Anna Kendrick.
All right. Fair enough. Well, I'm looking at the cast of, you know, kind of for all of these Easy episodes. And, you know, I mean, there's an Emily Ratajkowski episode coming up here in a minute. And Gugu Mbatha-Raw, who was the girl from I'm sorry if I butchered the pronunciation of that name, but she was the girl from San Junipero, is going to be in one of these episodes. So,
yeah.
Hannibal Buress. I don't have a crush on Hannibal Buress, but I'm excited to see him act in this thing. I'm generally excited about the prospect of Easy. So that's a recommend from me.
Agreed. I'm glad we've come to an agreement.
All right. You got any homework you want to assign? Because we should probably get the hell out of here.
You know, I don't have anything in mind except, you know, Brain Candy did come up organically somewhat when I brought it up for no reason earlier in the episode. If you want to watch it, I am about to watch a live reading of it, so we could certainly talk about it.
I'm going to give it a shot. I don't know about the availability, current availability of Brain Candy. I hope it doesn't turn into
a. It's going to be a problem, but see
turn into another do. Scratch. But I will certainly give it a shot.
I think it is less available than Scratch, but that somehow it may be easier for you because I still don't understand how you were unable to access Scratch.
All right. Well, we'll see. I don't think I really have anything that I'm like, oh, you should check out. Although maybe I DVR'd it the other night. Did you watch the new Tom Hardy show, Taboo, that was getting a lot of run during the Golden Globes?
No, but I'm going to. So we should talk about Taboo next week.
Right, let's talk about Taboo.
That is a good call.
So yeah, everybody watch an episode of Taboo. And I'm actually trying to go to a movie because I clearly have some Oscar contenders I need to see.
You know what? Then let me give you homework on that end.
Okay.
Let's make that movie Hidden Figures.
All right. I can do that.
Because I watched The Girl on the Train last night, and I enjoyed it, but I am hoping to enjoy Hidden Figures more. How's that?
Would you say at this point, and look, the Golden Globes are certainly not everything, but, it did sort of set up this kind of
the best movie I've seen this year.
Moonlight, which we've seen, and La La Land seem like the awards contenders. And
I have the screener, so I will watch that in the next week or two. So we could try to talk about both of those next week if you want, Hidden Figures and La La Land. But I have higher hopes. I don't know that you're. I assumed you would refuse to watch La La Land. If we're honest,
I am. I'm truly dreading La La Land. I'm
going to say about it because I have a feeling I'm going to be able to tell you that Moonlight was a better movie.
I'm a bit of an. We've talked a lot in the show. We're completists. So I do try to see as many of the prime Oscar contenders as I can. So
now that I'm an official SAG Awards voter, I feel a sense of responsibility, right. Actually. So I even intend to watch Manchester by the Sea, which I could not want to watch less.
Oh, see, I would much rather see Manchester by the Sea than La La Land, but I will probably see both. La La Land is going to be, for me, that'll be like homework. I'm going to watch it like homework. Like, this is a thing I should do.
I feel the way about Manchester by the Sea, even though I think it's probably a better movie than La La Land. I'm not ready for the misery.
I would embrace the misery before rather than watch a musical. Musicals bring me the misery. So,
If we have to rank your three least favorite type of visual entertainment, one, two, and three between musicals, depressing stuff, and superheroes, where...
Oh, yes.
What's one, two, and three?
I'd easily rather watch depressing stuff than superheroes, than musicals would be last.
So you'd rather watch a superhero movie? Like, if right now we walked into a theater and it was Captain America Civil War on one screen and La La Land on the other, you're choosing Captain America Civil War?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. If it was La La Land on one screen and snuff film on the other, I'd have to think about it.
God.
But I don't – and the thing is, like, I don't – superhero movies, like, I don't – I'm just tired of it. It's not that I, like – some of them I find enjoyable. I've definitely enjoyed some superhero movies. Yeah, I just – I'm just fatigued. I just feel like I've seen that story enough. It's okay. It's not like a hate, whereas musicals just drive me batty.
I have to say, as I get older, I get closer to you on the musical thing, but – I do really love both Gosling and Emma Stone.
Yeah, so I hear they're great. And you know what? I just think because this is a movie, this is definitely a movie about the magic of movies. Like that's gonna puts it in the driver's seat for Oscars. So we have to pay attention to that. And Hidden Figures, you know, I think of all of these movies, seems like one I would really enjoy. And I hear it's a really fun movie, but I have a feeling it's not going to be a major player come Oscar time. That's just my guess.
You may be right. I'm very interested to see how good of a movie I think it is. I'm sure afterwards I'll be even more in love with Janelle Monáe and I'll feel really good about the world and I'll feel uplifted and I'm sure I'll love the story itself. I'm very interested to see how good of a film it is, and but I have high hopes.
Where are you at on Fences?
I also have the screener of that. It's on the list, but that is not quite Manchester by the Sea level, but approaching that in terms of I'm not sure that I'm ready for the chore of watching it.
Yeah, man, I'm starting to really, like, it's too bad I left SAG. It would make my life a lot easier. All right. So we got some work to do. You guys got some work to do. We'll be back here.
Homework really is just check out as many Oscar contenders as you can, or SAG Award contenders as you can, I guess I should say, and we'll kind of go through them as best we can over the next couple weeks.
Yeah, here's the thing. It's like there's four football games, Saturday and Sunday. That's a lot of my prime going to the movies time. If I had screeners, I'd feel really confident about banging out all these Oscar contenders, but I actually have to go to a theater, so that's more of a challenge.
Saturday matinee. It's a 3:40 start for game one Saturday for you. Saturday matinee film, nooner.
Oh, yeah, I'd have to do a nooner. Because, the Saturday afternoon game is my game, so I need to be
all the
in
more
position.
Reason for you to go to a theater and chill out instead of driving yourself insane reading injury report updates all morning.
It's probably true, because I will be a wreck. I'm planning on watching all Falcon playoff games for the remainder of the year by myself. I feel like that's best for everyone. Like,
put a nice bottle of Cabernet into a Camelback and head to the theater.
All right. That's a plan.
A bottle of wine and a film, and then you'll be nice and lubricated and calm by the time the Falcons start beating the Seahawks.
I hope no one from St. Anthony, Maine is listening to this podcast. All right, guys. That's my home theater. All right. Thank you guys for listening. And what's that thing you always say at the end?
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard, the eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor, have yourself a tremendous evening.